Special Budget Approval Meeting to order. First, let me welcome all of you who are in attendance in person, as well as all of you are attending by Zoom or listening in to this. Ms. West, Bridget West, would you be kind enough to call the roll?
Yes, I will, thank you, Chair Bell. Regent Ball.
Present.
Regent Brinkley.
Present.
Regent Henson.
Present.
Regent McKinney.
Present.
Vice Chair Milliken.
Present.
Regent Nichols. Regent Spiller.
Present.
Regent Thomas.
Present.
Secretary West, present. Regent Winninger.
Present.
Okay, Mr. Vice Chair, we have 9 regents present, which represents a quorum of the board.
Very good. The first item on our agenda this morning is the finance and budget aspect of it. And so I'll turn the meeting over to Mr. McKinney, Regent McKinney, to address those issues.
Thank you. All right, the first item on our agenda today is FB1 approval of the 2022-23 operating budget.
Okay. There we go. I seem to have problems with this.
I'll get me to do it.
Okay, we'll just move to the next slide and then the next slide. Okay, thank you and good morning, everyone. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the adjustments since I made the presentation at the May meeting. As I told you, I think I promised or I hoped that the bottom line of the budget would not change, and it didn't. So there's no change to the bottom line. It remains at $383,447,700. So there were only one minor adjustment to the budget at this point, or to finish it up for the approval at this meeting. And that was after we ran fringe benefits, there was an increase of $15,000 to the fringe benefit, which is really not material. So we balanced that increase by balancing out other categories. So again, there were no changes to the bottom line. So what I decided to do, since I did a pretty detailed presentation at the May meeting, is just really hit the high points. So feel free to stop me at any point if you have any questions. So just a reminder on the current budget governance structure. And as we talked about at the May meeting, you'll see that we had the 3 committees, the OAC, the CAC, and the BEC. Now, as a reminder, and a lot of input from our faculty senate, our staff senate, and our SGA, and then the BEC would make the recommendation into campus leadership. So as a reminder, Provost Fisher and myself, talking with the president, have decided going forward, we're going to combine the OAC and the BEC into one larger committee, and we're going to do that for a 2-year trial period. Next slide. So as a reminder, these were the items that were funded as part of the budget. So what we're going to do with rapid inflation that I think we all know personally, we're going to monitor fixed costs across campus, primarily in facilities and IT. And we will monitor those on a monthly basis so that those areas' budgets aren't impacted by the inflationary. And we will fund those through one-time funds at the end of the year. We also have a 2% salary pool included in the budget. No decisions at this point how that will be distributed. But we'll be working with the combined BEC, OAC this summer to develop a recommendation on how that will be distributed effective January 1. Also, there are a few high priority items within primarily enrollment and within philanthropy that will be covered using the President's Strategic Initiative Fund. Next slide. So again, this is just a summary snapshot of what the budget looks like by the various categories and the change from fiscal year 22. So again, the bottom line of the budget is $383,447,700, and that represents almost an $8 million increase from the prior year. So a little bit about revenue. So again, you'll see we are certainly a tuition-dependent institution, representing about 46% of the budget. So we built the tuition budget this year using our full-time equivalent of almost 14,000. Now, as a reminder, our actual headcount, of course, is larger than that, and it is about 16,500. We used a projection, which I believe, working with Ethan, a conservative estimate for our first-time class of about 2,900. That represents about 76 more students than we had in the current year. And just as a reminder, we still have smaller classes working through the pipeline, and that does impact our tuition revenue projection. Well, also, the tuition budget includes a 1.19% tuition increase. So as part of the budget, you're also approving the actual tuition and fee schedule. So I wanted to include that in the, not only in your document, but in the presentation so that you can see what you're actually approving as far as a tuition structure. So you'll see that 1.2% increase in your resident undergraduate and your military rate. Graduate is, there are no increases in the graduate rates. There is one new rate that you'll be approving as part of this budget, and that's the local government employee discount program. That's going to be $500 per credit hour, and that's for the MPA program for the, isn't it the Barron River District? Okay, next slide. And you can see the remainder, except for the doctorate in psychology, that's going up 2.1%. The rest are remaining the same. Slide. And those are your other rates. So the dual credits going up is still very low, but based on the base, it's going up 26%. So it's $19. Okay, next slide. A reminder about state appropriation. We did get a big influx from the performance funding pool of about $6.4 million. The Mezzanet received a $1 million increase, and the LifeWorks at WKU received a one-time allocation that can be spent over multiple years of $2.8 million. Next slide. Any questions on the revenue side before we move to expenses? Okay. So just a reminder on the expenditure side, as we were on the revenue side, tuition dependent, on the expenditure side, most of our budget is made up of personnel, so salaries and wages and fringe benefit. And if you'll click the next slide, I think there's some animation, Anthony. There you go. So if you look at our personnel budget, it makes up about half of our expenditures, so 48%. Next slide. Again, included in the budget is a 2% salary pool that we discussed earlier. Also, a pretty significant increase to our financial aid program of $7 million. This represents the third class to go through for the new expanded scholarship model. Next slide. And I promise to be brief, so this is the final slide on the budget. The next steps, you'll be taking action on the budget today. It will go then the tuition schedule that you're going to be taking action on as part of the budget to the CPE for their meeting next week. And then the final piece that the budget staff will be working on is taking the budget data that's currently in the Axiom software and loading it into the Banner General Ledger. So that's all I have on the budget. So any questions?
I know that we have previously been provided with copies of this and have been informed about it through presentations before, but even with that said, do you have any questions or comments about the budget before we proceed?
Well, the first thing that I would say,
go ahead,
is just to recognize
the tremendous progress that's been made. I remember at this meeting a year ago, frustration I know I expressed about this transition to this process. And I have seen over the course of the year the work that's been done by Susan and your team and by Bud and his team and by the deans and others involved in these teams on campus. And so I really appreciate how far we've come. And I would just like to highlight just very briefly, I believe it's page 5, where we have the ramp budget that comes in, and this is the first time for us to see this at this level, and this was the first time for this to be shared on campus as well. You know, this is one of the goals of what we were trying to do with this whole process, to get to strategically funding the colleges that are showing growth and working towards that. So I don't know if the provost would like to say anything about that or if anybody else would, since that is new to us and has been a goal of what we've been trying to do.
So I'll just I'll take a few high levels and then Bud, I can turn it over to you.
Sure.
And so just as a reminder, all of the tuition revenue and all of the state appropriation goes into our academic units. They're then charged a participation fee of 13%. That participation fee goes, it's 13% of tuition and state appropriation. And 13% goes to fund our administrative units off the top. And then it also then leaves money for the subvention pool. So, Bud, if you want to kind of talk a little bit about subvention.
Yeah, each individual college comes to a bottom line. And if you were to look at the budget, you see that they're in a negative. I get a percentage, I believe it was around $12.5 million, to then have discussions with all of the deans about what the future looks like. How do we move forward and how do we lower subvention? So the conversations we had were first, what are your strategic plans for the future? Secondly, what are your major things that you will accomplish in the next year? And then we talked about how to use the model and become efficient within the model and to help in recruitment and retention to ultimately be able to grow the budget. And that was what we did. And I asked for every college to give me an efficiency report that tells me what you're going to work on in the next year, and we have worked on that, and I have those. And our plan is to lower what subvention is there so that we use less money to get them out of debt, and we have money left to do some more strategic initiatives. And that's where we are right now.
And I think an important feature of this type of budget model is that as the academic units are more successful in growing the revenue, what you'll see is subvention going down and money for strategic initiatives going up. So that's what I know we will see as we move forward.
And if I could weigh into, 5 years is a long time coming, but the conversation that you just saw around strategy, outcomes, retention and recruitment, and the devolution of control to the deans is exactly where we wanted to wind up. So we're through with phase one of this, and I'm proud of the transparency it creates for the entire campus. This is no longer my budget or Susan's budget. It's our budget as an institution. And that kind of attention to this as a tool for growth, I think, serves us well going forward. And so I appreciate the kind word Reed and spoke.
Richard Brinkley, did you have something more?
It's just a comment. You know, we have these discussions monthly now with Susan, Shane, and I. Anytime there's a budget presentation or a question about finances, and you know, this week was particularly hectic related to that. I mean, we got time with President Camone, Susan, Ronaldo, Ryan, Christy, I mean, and Shane got time with the provost. And that happened in the last 2 days. And some of it was extensive amounts of time and several hours of commitment. And that really demonstrates exactly what President Caboni just said. Both of us had questions. Both of us needed things addressed so we wouldn't sit in here and tie up the meeting with them. And I feel that this is a very fiscally responsible budget. It was different than the one we had the previous year, so we had some questions around how it was listed in the narratives, and everything was satisfied. So I agree. I think it's been a great transformation. I'm the first one, if I think that it's fiscally irresponsible to say something. This is a very carefully thought out and planned budget, and I cannot tell you enough how much I appreciate the time that particularly yesterday, that Susan, Ronaldo, Brian, Christy, and the provost put in the shame. It was more than they planned on, and I appreciate that, because it took a lot to get some of those answers, and they didn't know the questions were coming, so I appreciate that.
Any other questions or comments?
Jason, I just want to also take one moment. I really have to take a moment to recognize Ronaldo and Brian, the work that they did to bring Axiom up and alive, because this time last year, right, Bud? Bud did a lot of talking me off the ledge, so I'm very, very grateful.
I may have been behind you pushing you off the ledge.
Matthew or Linda, do y'all have anything
that
y'all want to say? Questions? Okay. I just want to make sure.
There's one more thing, I'm going to ask Dean Murphy, who is joining us via Zoom, if she would be willing to weigh in from a decanal perspective around how it is that she dealt with her budget, but also you see how we work through subventions. She had some additional resources available to her. Corinne, would you talk about the process that you all went through in your college? Because this becomes increasingly more important as the deans have their hands dirty in the budgeting process.
Sure, and good morning, everyone. Less than a year ago, I spoke at the Board of Regents retreat around the college level strategy and the implementation efforts that we were engaging in order to really achieve a level of sustainability within the budget model that was fiscally sound. And so what you're seeing on this screen for our college is actually the results of that. And while we are in subvention, we also have been recognized at this point for achieving metrics of efficiency, for growth within our student body. And so we're able to say to our faculty and to our staff that we see what efforts you're making. Those efforts are actually available to all via the variables and metrics that we use to develop the budget. And with the subvention dollars that are available to the college now, we will meet our costs, if you will. But also the dollars that are above and beyond those costs, the $409,000, we had a conversation with our leadership team yesterday. We have lots of conversations throughout the year around what should we be doing in order for us to continue to achieve strength in our faculty, growth in our students, retention and graduation success for our students once they hit their professional paths. And so just yesterday, as now these numbers, as Shane indicated earlier, are available to everyone, we were able to solidify some plans around increasing faculty professional development for this coming year, increasing some graduate assistant support, because graduate assistants play a key role in faculty success in scholarly activities, but also within the strength of our graduate programs. We're taking a look at student wages for student workers, because we know that it's a competitive environment out there. We want our students to take advantage of student work opportunities that are on campus. It keeps them on campus. It helps them engage and build relationships with faculty and staff across the college. And then we're going to partner with IT around establishing an information technology consultant. Our college at this point is the only college that doesn't have a shared position with IT supporting its operations around technology. And so we'll be incorporating that into our Student Success Center as well to make sure that digital success is a big part of student success within the College of Education and Behavioral Sciences, because our students are engaging in technology outside in their professional careers all the time. So those are the things that we've been talking about and that we were able to solidify now that we have access to these additional investment dollars. And I think the other point that's really important is that these are one-time dollars at this time. So we have to be very careful about how we designate those one-time dollars. And in each college, you're going to see that differently, because each college has very different needs that they've been investigating and reviewing over time in order to reach success within this kind of model. So I'm just excited that we are going into this, and we do. I echo all of the comments around establishing Axiom and reestablishing Axiom, and getting ourselves to this point where we all feel good about what it is that we're looking at and what it is that we're about to do for the university. So it's a great moment, I would say.
Thank you. Regent Ball, did you have a comment? I guess not. I thought you could raise your hand. Regent Whitaker, did you have a comment?
Yes, my apologies. I'm a full time on duty. I hope that we can, before we reflect on the fact that we are in inflation, and something I will do better next time, because in the face of inflation right now, dealing with that only makes sense. Though I hope that at the university, we can use the opportunity time to help students address issues that may arise as they will be making more enforcement things like mask.
Thank you. Do we have any other questions or comments? Any further discussion? Hearing none, the chair will accept a motion to approve the 2022-23 operating budget.
So moved.
Motion's been made. Second. Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. The second item on the agenda is FD number 2, Regent McKinney.
All right, do we have a presentation for this, Brian? I think it's you up.
Are you? Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to see everyone in person. It's always a pleasure to be here.
This is part of yours, right, Susan?
Yeah, it's the same one. Yeah. I would just keep them up. It's going to be.
If anybody's had an opportunity to go around campus or look outside, the flowers, the grass, and then you'll look around the corner, you might run into a little construction. the first item we have today is the Commonwealth, and I really want to go back a little bit. You all took the opportunity and approved the 2021-2021 master plan, and there was a lot of big ideas in the master plan. The Gordon Ford College of Business has been our number one priority for many years. And I can't tell you personally how excited I was, and Dr. Shook, I know that we didn't ever know if that would happen during our tenure or come to fruition. And I think the university this year has this budget that the Commonwealth has, it's been one of the best budgets that I've seen since, in a decade. It's tremendous. So the first part of our presentation is wanted to bring back to your attention the process for design and construction of a new Gordon Ford College of Business. The site location will be the site where Tate Page Hall is outside our doors. This is a project that we mentioned that supports, it's been our number one priority. It's been in our capital, the master plan. It's also being funded at a rate, $74.4 million. Our goal is to start construction July 1 of 2023. And our big goal is to open this facility for fall of 2025. Dr. Shook, would you like to, we've started a programming and schematic phase. I'd love you for you to talk about that with the board and just how the experience is going and if you're excited.
Well, I'm just a little excited. No, not really. The entire faculty and staff are all really super excited. We have been working on the design with Gensler, the architects, and I've never been involved in building a new building, so it's been a really interesting process, and I kept thinking, how are they going to get a building out of all these meetings and surveys and observations. And the process has been really quite extensive, and I'm really excited. I will say it's a daunting responsibility to build a building that's not the building we need today, but the building we need for many, many decades. And so Binsler has used a lot of input and a lot of expertise to make sure that we build a building that's effective and efficient and will help us draw students in and help us outreach to the community. And it's really been quite a process, and it's really quite rewarding and exciting, I think. You know, for so many years we were number one and we just never had a new building. It's been a little hard to believe, and I think everybody believes it now. And really appreciate the efforts to secure the funding. So I'm happy to answer other questions.
I just think it's exciting for the university, and to have this come into fruition is just outstanding. Bring it back in front of the board.
If I could, Rudy McKinney.
Certainly.
I was never in doubt that we were going to have this during our tenure, so I don't know what you all were concerned about. I do want to thank Jennifer Smith and the time we put into securing this funding. It wasn't just this session, right? So we've been talking about the need for this building for years before I even arrived on campus, and have spent the past four or five sessions really making this clear why it was important for the university. And so I want to thank her, Jennifer, for those efforts, but also I'm really proud of what a new facility will do. A great college of business deserves a great place to do its business, and we're going to have a space that the entire institution can be proud of, and most importantly, we're going to create a space that serves our students and increases their success. Again, this is not just about a new facility. It is about transforming the way in which we teach, how we support young people, and how we prepare them for careers afterward. And so that's the entirety of that conversation around designing a physical space that does all of that, and at the same time enhances the beauty of our campus, which is a differentiator for us. The spot just off of South Lawn is prominent. This will be a building that is a symbol for, as Chris said, decades to come. And so it's a tremendous opportunity for the university. And you will remember, one last thing, Gensler, who are the architects, are the same architects that did the Commons. And so they've done how many business schools during the past decade, Brian?
Oh, gosh. We look over the last 10 years. I don't remember how many they have done, but they are nationally recognized as top designers in the country. So. Very comfortable. We had a lot of good responses to RFQ, but they definitely rose to the top as having the most business schools in the last 5 years and all the other states. So we're getting one of the best.
If I may briefly just like to say, I hope as we do this, we're thinking about, for any building we do now, we're thinking in the future, what will education look like in 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, as someone who spent 17 years at Bryce Hall. It obviously was not part of that plan as that was constructed. And I'm very excited about this and hope to still be here when it's constructed. We'll see how that works out. If the board is okay, could I make the motion to approve this?
Well, first, do we have any other questions or comments? Hearing none, I will accept the motion to approve the construction of the new board College of Business.
Please, motion to approve.
They have a second.
Second. Thank you.
All in favor, say aye. Opposed, like sign. Hearing none, motion carries unanimously.
The second opportunity that we've gotten from the state of Kentucky has to do with
Moved on to action item FB3. Am I correct? Just so we sound the same thing. Very good.
The other opportunity the state of Kentucky has provided to the West Kentucky University is an asset preservation fund, and the way that the fund is structured is $34 million. And the reason I talk about the asset preservation fund, it gives us an opportunity to look at the campus as a whole and address some of the deferred maintenance and things that aging infrastructure. And one of the things that we have tried to do, and even included in our master plan, is what can we do for our E&G and our classroom facilities to enhance students, their success, recruitment. And so we have one here that was identified as in poor condition in the master planning process. It has one of the largest, Grice Hall was the number one in the number of minutes in the classroom. Cherry Hall is second. And if you look at it in a classroom, that's over a year's worth of students in time and hours. I think it works out to about 10,000 hours of classroom time in Cherry Hall. So what that tells us is that almost all of our students have an opportunity to go through this iconic historic building. I've mentioned that this is one of Britton B. Davis's. He created our original master plan. There are several of his structures on campus, and we would like to preserve this building, do a deep dive study of it. We know we have some things that need to be done. Our facilities department has, you know, things behind the walls, HVAC improvements, finish improvements. Just indoor air quality. There's a lot of things, exterior, that need to be taken care of, interior. So we want to do a study and then get a plan together to implement, to go through this facility from top to bottom to preserve it for the next 30, 40, 50 years and on. But we're going to need to do some serious work for this facility over time. It'll have to be planned because we do have so many classrooms, and so it'll be strategically as we open up space, we'll use that as transition space, and then we'll probably have to do this project in phases. But present this project up to $30 million to work on, as use some of the asset preservation funds to address some of the deferred maintenance and preserve this building.
Reed McKay?
Yes.
Also proud of this opportunity and thankful for the state's investment to help us address our deferred maintenance needs as an institution. We have about $500 million in deferred maintenance, but we are approaching it strategically. As you see, we're addressing Grice Hall, which is number one need. This is the number two need. We're going to address it and address it aggressively. Just as a reminder, we spent about $30 million on the transformation of Helm Library with the Commons. This is the same level of investment in Cherry Hall. And so I have heard through the grapevine that folks are worried that all the money is going to be spent on HVAC and behind the walls, and you won't be able to see anything done to the building. As a reminder, what we did to the library, you can tell we did something to that building, and I guarantee you we also were going to transform Cherry Hall to preserve it for another several generations of students and faculty and staff. And so I'm just really excited about the opportunity this creates for us to reimagine what that instructional space looks like and the way in which our faculty and our students engage in it. Also, a tremendous opportunity. It is the front door of the university, one of our most iconic buildings. Lastly, if you have been behind the building in the past couple of weeks, we are also transforming the hilltop, the opportunity to reimagine the backside of Cherry and create a way for people to look down the hill, similar to the way in which we opened up the Commons, I think is a tremendous, and again, once-in-a-generation opportunity for the institution. So I'm very proud of this.
Am I remembering right that 85% is going to be funded by the state?
85% is funded by the state. We have to come up with the other 15% of that. And we have been, as you well know, conservative and putting money into places where we can reinvest them. And this is one of the ways in which we will fund that 15%. We also are going to ask you for asset preservation dollars later in the meeting. the dollars that we will get returned to us from the state for projects we have already spent money on also will can shift over and be used for that 15% as well. I don't know if that makes any sense.
It's about $5 million per budget cycle or per year that we will be to match the $34 million. There's total $68 million over the next 2 years. We put $10 million, so we'll be doing $78 million worth of investment back into the university, which will produce significant and improved operational sustainability and for many years to come. DFM has, we will be reaching out and talking to all the deans and provosts about what their priorities are, what buildings. But we've created a list that we've identified about $45 million really quite easily about indoor air quality and things that you might not see. We actually started this summer, and I get a little long, but we've got 8 different locations on campus where we're replacing critical infrastructure, and that's primarily the steam lines that are underground. You don't see them, but without that, we can't heat the building. So they were in need of desperate repair, so we've already started that process, because the best time for the university to do some of these heavy lifts is during the summer when we're not as busy. But I will promise you this campus stays busy year-round. So, but it is much more desirable. We get 90 days of less people on campus, and if you go around campus, you will see that we have a lot of things to get ready for fall. But they're pouring concrete at the faculty house today, and that's in the backside of Cherry Hall, and we're making ADA improvements there first, and we're putting automated doors in at the Cherry Hall back entrance to give our students, faculty, and staff a main door to go into, which they've never had as access. So there's things like that go on all the time, but very proud of the work that gets done in the summer.
Just a conservative estimate.
It could be 20. It's an up to amount.
Any other questions or comments?
Yeah, do we have any further questions or comments on the action item FB3? I noticed Regent Nichols has joined us. Welcome. All right, then the chair would accept a motion to approve, to preserve, renovate, and renew, and or renew Indre Harbin Cherry Hall.
I so moved.
Have a motion, second?
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Next item is FB3, refinance of athletic debt upgrade facilities.
So our athletic director, Todd Stewart, is going to join me in this presentation. So can't be able to go to the next. I just wanted to go through the high-level important considerations for these projects. So first off, it will be a total bond issue of $50 million that will be payable over a 20-year period. What's important to Matthew and our students, there will be no increase to our existing student athletic fee. A third consideration from a financial point of view is there will be no significant increase in the annual debt service over the life of the project. As I started out by saying, while the debt restructure proposal is $50 million, it really only means that we're taking on an additional $39 million in debt, because the $11 million is already debt that we're paying for that's being held right now by the city of Bowling Green. And that final one is extremely important, and I'll share some graphs towards the end of this presentation, is that there will be our debt burden on operations will actually decrease over time, even with the new debt coming on. So the first part of this project, and I like to say this is somewhat of a no-brainer. So this is our financial advisor has been talking to us for some time about doing this. So it's refunding the existing Diddle Arena debt, and that's approximately $11 million. And the date of maturity remains the same, so it's about 4 more years to pay that debt off. And that will provide savings of about $400,000. It's about $100,000 a year over the next 4 years. Next slide, Anthony. The next piece of this, and then I'm going to just kind of go over some high-level bullets, and then I'm going to turn it over to our expert on this as far as what it means for athletics. So I really, when I learned all of this, I thought, wow. So this is, our press box was originally constructed in 1968, so I think that says a lot right there. The cost of the renovation will be somewhere between $4 and $6 million. The current press box is not ADA compliant. There's no elevator in the facility. There's only one restroom in the facility, no air conditioning or heat. And then really the last bullet, it's requires the coaching staff and the press to actually walk up through the bleachers to reach the press box. So that in and of itself is a it's really just a huge safety concern. So Todd, do you want to speak to some other considerations?
Sure, be glad to. Thank you. Thank you all for the opportunity to speak here today. The bullet points outline it really well, but what I would say, as everyone knows, not just in athletics, but more importantly through the entire campus, we've had significant facility improvements over the years. Unfortunately, the press box has not been one of those. And during this time frame, our football program has really grown. It's very successful. We've been to a bowl game 8 of the last 10 years. And as a result of that, we have a lot more national media covering our team. We have national broadcast companies coming in and doing games. We have prominent programs coming here for the first time. We had Indiana from the Big Ten Conference here last year. And so the perception that they get when they come to a football game and go to the press box is a terrible one. You know, it's nowhere close to the perception they would get if they were on any other part of this campus. So it's the press box was built in 1968, and if you've been up there, it's every bit of a 1968 press box. It's just not where it needs to be. And this will be a huge step forward, and obviously from an image standpoint, but from an efficiency standpoint also. It'll be a first-class operation and just increase people's ability to cover the team. And I've talked to David, and we'll have more conversations. I think we can involve students in this in ways we haven't before, just by adding some of the new technology to this. So it would be a huge thing for us to add this.
Let me add a comment very quickly if I can on this. What a lot of people don't understand about press boxes and access is that when any kind of television crew comes in or any kind of media group comes in, there's a significant amount of equipment that has to go to the press box or around the press box. Right now, and this has been this way since forever, since I've been alive, all of our students and engineers, and we have to take significant steps to make sure that this is not a safety hazard. We each camera platform typically carries about 175 pounds of separate gear up and down for each game. And with the other complication related to this is that, you know, to have media access and accurate, to get computers to work properly, you can't overheat the room. One of the terrifying things that exists in this building and has forever is there's no elevator, but there's an elevator shaft. So there's some oddities that were created structurally that really make under the bleachers for the media a much safer place, and that's not really where you want anybody. So I have waited for this for a long time. It's good for our students because it will be a safer environment where we have to right now secure people with cables and all kinds of odd things to get them to go up there. So this is a needed renovation for the students, for opportunity, and for anybody that goes up there.
Ms. Chair, if I could add one thing. As you can imagine, the idea of students hauling equipment up is terrifying. But the experience for our opposing coaching staff, who has to walk through our crowd, not just the beginning of the game, not just after the game, but in the middle of the game to get down to the locker room and get back up, is not something we really want to subject any guests to our university to. And so this will help us address that as well. And so I'm appreciative of the way in which we've structured this, that does not put any additional burden on students or the budget. So we're really proud of the work, the refinancing work, but also the creativity of our athletics department and our finance organization to get this done.
The final project that we're going to talk about today, if you can forward the slide, is our Hilltop Roof Field House. So let me first say this is, we have not gotten any architectural rendering, so this is just an existing field house at another institution that we liked because it looks a lot like our buildings on campus. So we've actually done some photoshopping of putting our logo on, and so again, no decisions have been made, no work has been done. This was just taking an existing one on another campus. And so the estimated cost of this project is somewhere between $32 and $35 million. I think we can say that it would position, as we talked about with Cherry Hall and our business school, this would position WKU favorably for the future. Without a doubt, it would create a first-class indoor training facility for about 16 WKU sports. It would provide a permanent indoor facility for our Big Red Marching Band. Our baseball clubhouse and hitting facility would exist in the field house. And then it's not just an athletic facility. It would actually be utilized from things like forensics to intramural sports, E&A sports. So, Todd, I'll turn this one over to you.
Yes, I mean, this would be a game changer for us. I mean, it really would. It enables our athletes that are here to train in a way they can't right now when weather becomes an issue. And sometimes you think of weather in the wintertime, but with football team in August, lightning's an issue. And many times practices are canceled or delayed because of lightning. So to have an indoor facility for all of our sport programs to train in would be huge for our athletes. It would help recruiting tremendously. This is the most significant thing that we don't have. It's used against us in recruiting. So obviously that to have that would take that issue off the table. So it's huge for athletics. But I do think, like Susan said, I think it's neat because of the other areas it will involve as well. I mean, the Big Red Marching Band now has a permanent practice facility if the weather's bad. That's 300 students right there and growing, you know, that will be positively impacted by this. And I think even beyond that, I think we can be very creative with intramural sports. For example, we could have like football tournaments and our coaches could be referees. I mean, there's ways that we can brainstorm and I think incorporate athletics and the student body in a way that we don't right now. And then even moving forward, as we all know, it's important to drive enrollment, to grow our enrollment. And one way to do that, I feel, is to bring people to campus that may not have otherwise been here. We envision local high school programs being able to practice in this facility, certainly in the fall and when they're preparing for their state tournament, and I think that will bring people to camp sometimes for the first time. So it's obviously huge for athletics, but I think it's a win-win for a lot of constituencies and it's a game changer.
Yes. you all know my commitment to our marching band program, and if you're ever on campus, and I know people like to hear them practice around campus, they currently have to march on South Lawn. And if you remember what happens on Saturday on South Lawn on football weekends, it makes it impossible for them to practice because there are tents and other things set up. And so we're going to have a world-class marching band program on this campus, and this facility will help ensure that they have a dedicated practice space. And Todd and I have had the conversation that they will have their time on that field, and so will football. And so I'm really proud of being able to make this investment for them. You also will recall when we took down Garrett, our forensics program moved to a small house that used to be the honors building, and before that was the community college building right up on the hill across from the planetarium and across from College High Hall. We're going to hopefully, as we go through this process, create an appropriate space for also our world-class forensics program. For them to practice and do work. And then lastly, sports and esports is becoming an ever more important part of the campus community. We envision carving out a place where we can have an esports arena and also in this. And all credit for the photograph goes to Southern Methodist University. Some of you may recall we played a bowl game at SMU.
2019.
I happened to be on that trip and went to our pregame practice in a facility that looked exactly like this, and was just really impressed by it. And so all thanks to SMU for the inspiration and allowing us to use their facility as a placeholder for our facility. Yes.
Todd, when will the press box renovation take place? What season can we expect it to be up and functioning?
So what we will do, pending your approval after this meeting, is we will bid out both the design and the construction of both of these projects. And the time frame involved in that will not enable us to start the press box until after the 2023 season. So we'd have two more seasons to, ideally it'd be nice to start it after this current season, but I think that rushes it. And one thing that we can't have happen is start construction and then have it not finished when the next football season starts. So we'll start it right after the 2023 football season. It should be finished really by the summer of 24.
And what about the Hilltopper Fieldhouse?
We'll bid that out again after this meeting and envision breaking ground on that in the summer of 23, a year from now. And that's probably a 15 to 18 month project.
Thank you.
As someone who's hoping to be in a college of business near the South Lawn soon, I would appreciate the band not practicing. What's the approximate square footage of this facility, do you think, where we're going to end up?
Yeah, I don't know exactly, just from the standpoint that it involves a lot of rooms. And the size of this, and it will be first class, but it will overlap the current grass practice field, but it also will overlap where the baseball clubhouse and hitting facility are now. Those will be rebuilt inside of this and be better than they are currently, but I don't know until we get some of the specific drawings exactly what that would be.
Okay, and that was my next question, was exactly where we were looking to put this. My only concern, and this is not, it's just we're talking about a lot of different groups coming together to use this facility and having some sort of coordination here to make sure that the access to those other groups is something that will happen as it goes forward.
No, it definitely will, and we'll have a building manager. I mean, we'll have somebody that coordinates and schedules everything, so it's not a haphazard thing where two or three people show up at the same time and think they can use it. We'll have a very organized system.
I know we've all had a presentation on this before today, and appreciate your all's presentation today. Do we have any other questions or comments? Then I would entertain a motion to provide for the authorization, issuance, and sale of general receipts, refunding obligations in an aggregate principal amount not to exceed $52 million.
So moved.
Second. I have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion carries unanimously. We move on to finance and budget. Item number five.
Okay, this is my last one, I promise. So, go this forward. So this is another one of those that you just need to do. We have the opportunity to refinance the DSU renovation bonds. This would be the phase three of the renovation. It's the series 2012A that was issued back in June 6th of 2012 for approximately approaching $36 million. So the refunding of the remaining amount of $20.3 million will result in savings of about $1.4 million or $140,000 annually over the remaining 10 years of the loan. The date of maturity will not change. Again, these bonds will be paid off in fiscal year 2032. So I did want to say this because we kind of missed the last part of what I was going to show you on the long-term debt outlook. So Anthony, I think it's important for the board to, can you go back a couple, maybe a couple more. Okay, so if you'll look at these are some of the things we do when we talk about refinancing and looking at our debt structure within the financial area. So if you look back in 2013, 2014, you can see where our long-term debt peaked at that point. And so we've been paying off our obligations and not issuing any more debt over the years. And so you'll see that currently we're at 22% our long-term debt to total assets. And so we are. This would suggest that we're relatively low degree of risk. And you'll see even with this issuing more of that debt that we just talked about and you approved, we will go up for a couple of years. Only because the TIDL debt is ballooning, but then we will actually go down. So issuing the additional debt that we've just talked about will actually, we will continue to reduce our risk exposure. So I just wanted to mention that as we talk about all of this refinancing.
Yes, Mr. Chair, you will recall the slide around cash on hand and other fiscal metrics that we look at and our health as an institution, and you all have learned over the years that I'm fiscally conservative, do not like too much debt, but know that it's necessary to carry some debt, and I'm also really proud of the work that we've done to bring that debt load, debt burden ratio down. We are actually right at or below the national average for the KUBO. We want to stay right in the middle of that. And when you look at our peer institutions, we also, as a percentage, are where we need to be. And so,
yeah, if you just go to the next slide, you'll see that. So,
there we go.
You'll see that our long-term debt to total assets, we're really right at the top. So we're in really, really good shape as compared to some of our other benchmark institutions.
Any other comments? Anyone have any questions or comments concerning finance and budget? Item number five. If not, I'll entertain a motion to provide for a resolution providing for the authorization, issuance, and sale of general receipts, refunding obligations in an aggregate principal amount of approximately $20,500,000.
So moved.
Have a motion to have a second.
Second.
Have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say no. Hearing none, motion carries unanimously. The next item is action item number FB6, asset preservation of campus-wide infrastructure.
As we talked about earlier, about the things that the university needs, and Dr. Gaboni mentioned, there was a study done by the state of Kentucky in 2000, completed in 2007. It was a facilities assessment study, and as you can imagine, that was done a long time ago, and that did identify like $536 million worth of assets on our campus that had passed their useful life. The university has done a great job at keeping this university healthy, operational, and minimizing the disruption of what we do every day, and that's teach students. In 2017, the Department of Facilities Management embarked and spent about $100,000 and did an additional asset preservation or a facilities assessment study utilizing the same company that was done in 2007. We wanted consistency. And the Commonwealth had been talking with the other institutions about doing an asset or doing a facilities assessment. So we revalidated. We've made a lot of strategic moves on campus. We've done some really great things about removing facilities on campus that were actually like Bemis and Barnes. We've taken down Tate Page Hall. And when we said we didn't have faith, Tate Page was like 15 years. We were going to take it down. It was in real need. It passed its useful life. We've also now taken away Garrett, and we've also, as a university, strategically taken a facility that had great bones in the Helm Library, which used to be the physical and health education building where we played basketball so many years ago, and it's now on its third life in the same building, and it's going to be there for many, many years. but we've replaced all the infrastructure. We've replaced all the pipes behind the walls, all the drainage, all the plumbing, all the electric. And so as we do that, we're really seeking with this funding from the state to tackle things on campus that you don't see, but we desperately have to keep operational. And so we've identified in here just some highlights. Our steam distribution, we would like authorization from you all to spend up to $3 million with our exterior lighting, which is pedestrian lighting. And if you don't know, our students every year, we go with our student government body. We do a safety walk on campus. The number one thing that comes up with our students is pedestrian lighting and the perception of safety. And a well-lit area is demonstrated to be safer on campus. So sanitary sewer, natural gas, building automation system upgrades. And some may not know what that is, but that's the brains that actually turns on, off air conditioning, helps us be one of the most efficient universities in the state of Kentucky on what I call kilowatts per square foot. And as our prices and inflation and things go up, it is very important for our usage to go down. And this university has done that, and we're a leader in that since 2008. Very proud of that. Fiber optic cabling, high voltage distribution, domestic water, and storm systems will also be evaluated and improved where needed. Any questions on this particular? If you ask me why, I'm going to tell you the state of Kentucky has a set of guidelines that they have given to us for asset preservation. And as we spend the money, we will be able to be reimbursed for the expenses. Strategically, we have project accounts that have been set up where in the past, we strategically have been saving money in these project accounts. And so the match, Jason, a lot of that match is already accounted for in those projects that we'll be able to utilize now. But now what's nice is that if I needed $2 million, I didn't have $2 million before. I had to save multiple years. Now I'll be able to go ahead and execute that project and be reimbursed at 85%, utilizing funds that we've already set aside to do steam projects. And that's how we're doing the work right now before we've received any funding. So that's a benefit to the university.
Do we have any questions or comments concerning this action item, finance and budget number 6? If not, I would entertain a motion to approve the asset preservation projects for the campus-wide infrastructure.
Second.
Have a motion and second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion carries unanimously.
Thank you all.
The next item on the agenda is the is action item nominating committee number 1, the 2022-23 board slate of officers and appointment of treasurer, Regent Nichols.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. And we normally review nominate our officers for the Board of Regents the coming year, and so this is a recommendation from the nominating committee for the 2022-23 board officers and the appointment of the treasurer. The committee members are myself, Linda Ball, and Jay Weston. Thank you for their participation. By unanimous recommendation, we are recommending the following regents for officers: Regent Bell as chair, Regent Morgan as vice chair, and Regent West as secretary, and then our treasurer would be Susan Fuller, as the role that she plays now. I do want to mention about Susan, this does not, it's odd for me to say this, this doesn't add to her level of responsibilities in the job that she has to do now, given that she provides this service to the board as well. And there she's really fantastic. Also, chairs of the committees are basically appointed by the chair of the Board of Regents, and that is not responsible to be taken on the nominating committee. With that, I
do we have any questions or comments? If not, I'll entertain a motion for the approval of the 2022-23 board slate of elected and appointed officers. Have a motion, have a second?
Second.
And a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, no. Hearing none, the motion carries unanimously. That concludes the items on our special budget approval meeting agenda. We will have another session for our committee meeting, but I think it appropriate to take a break at this time.
Seven.
We will adjourn then for 10 minutes and reconvene at that time.